Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. I've learned that the demons stop chasing you when you stop running from them, and they only begin to disappear when you turn around to face them. Though that's the tough part, turning on the demons, changing, because those demons weren't just chasing you, they were keeping you company on the lonely roads of addiction, the roads of self-destruction, self-loathing, the roads of pain, the roads where the damned feel at home, lost, alone, guilty, but home. Run away from that home. Shed that heavy shadow. Turn things around. Understand that no matter what evil you've wrought, it's been seen. There are no secrets. You are free, if you'd like to be. If you're willing to face what you've done, change who you are. It is already forgiven. Though for some, the darkness is in their fabric. So to shed that shadow would mean destroying themselves. The willfully guilty, in the face of redemption, they must spit and proclaim that I will not turn on my demons. I will not change. I'd rather be me. Welcome to Dark Topic. I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. Raymond Eugene Brown. Raymond Eugene Brown wasn't always known by three names. As a child growing up in Clay County, Alabama, he was affectionately known as Gene. This by his older brother Roy, younger brother David, his caring mother Emma May, and his strict, often miserable father, Marvin. Marvin Brown, a so-called shade tree mechanic, meaning non-professional mechanic, uncertified, doing what he could for people in their driveways under the shade of a tree for cheap. Marvin, as I said, was miserable. He had a condition where he'd repeat the last word of a sentence. It was probably OCD. OCD, OCD. He was of some Native American descent, which made him quite handsome. Black hair, dark eyes, tan skin. Gene would favor his father in genetics, but not in demeanor, at least early on. Gene had a big white smile like his mother, whom he loved dearly. Dad worked where he could, and Mom took care of the kids. There was little to scrape by on, but Mom made sure they were fed, while Dad made sure they got beat with a belt that the boys so much as looked at him funny. The family was dirt poor, which stressed Father Marvin out greatly. The Browns, by the time Gene was 10, had been forced to live in a ramshackle house on his grandmother's farm. There was no running water there, only a 100-yard path to a well on Emma May's mother, Ethel May Ogle's patch of homestead, where from Ethel, grandmother to Gene, the star of our show, would take care not only of the Brown family in this provision of a roof overhead, but also of her ailing 83-year-old mother-in-law, Evelina Ogle. Both Grandma and Great-Grandma Ogle were widowed. Great-Grandma was unable by this time, the late 50s, to care for herself, and was bedridden. The Browns had themselves a couple cows, pigs, and more than a couple chickens, a few. And it's with the chickens where Gene morphs into Eugene, as he'll come to be known as a teenager. Eugene always volunteers to kill off a chicken when the time comes, and you could probably guess why. He enjoys the task, though who wouldn't? There's nothing more entertaining than throttling a chicken, twisting its head off, than watching it run around, blood spurting from the stump, like a chicken with its head cut off. That's the thing. Most farmers just pop the head off. It's a grab and twist movement. I've seen it happen. It's fairly humane. You know, you just try not to let the other chickens bear witness to it. It stresses them out, ruins the meat. Gene, or Eugene, pardon me, preferred to terrorize the chickens, chase them around too long, unnecessarily, grab one, let it go, spook them up like a wolf in the hen house, before finally making his selection, then slamming the poor chicken to the floor where he'd slowly cut its head off with a knife. He figured it was all the same to the dinner table, though perhaps the chickens that Eugene would bring in were a little tougher than the ones his brothers would bring. They had an off taste, Eugene's chickens, from the acidic marinade of adrenaline. It should be mentioned that this family, including Grandma Ogle, would often eat together. Great-Grandma Ogle would be visited like a shrine in her bedroom, a shrine that Raymond Eugene Brown would later say always smelled like cleaner and dog shit. Eugene was a football star, wide receiver for the junior varsity Clay County Panthers of Ashland, Alabama. By the season of 1960, and with Eugene at 14 years of age, things started to get a little more professional in the league. Suddenly, players were required to wear cleats. Eugene couldn't afford cleats. He tried asking his father, who promptly said, "No, no, no." He attempted to bait his grandmother by leaving a Sears catalog open in her home to a page presenting a pair of $5 cleats. But though Grandma had money, she was frugal. The only thing Eugene ever saw his grandmother shell out were peas. In reality, Grandma Ogle did not have a lot of money, just in comparison to the Brown family. She was receiving a fat monthly $50 check from the government, a check she had just cashed when Eugene caught wind of where the money was and hatched a plan to get a piece of it. The money was in the guest room cabinet. Shouldn't it be too difficult to sneak into a home with two old women and slip a $5 bill away unnoticed? The trick would be to take a little. A little can be blamed on the bank or an old biddy with bad eyes. Blind old bats and their young fly as Eugene makes his way barefoot in dirty jeans and a t-shirt down the path to his grandmother's house around midnight of Saturday, October 1st, 1960. The path, as mentioned, was 100 yards, the length of a football field. With any luck, Eugene will return back up the path, still barefoot, but with the means to soon have cleats on his feet after this small trip. As he walks through the dark wood down the path towards the well at Grandma's house, it's hard to know how much of his own darkness Eugene brings. Is it an empty pail? Or is it brimming over? There have been signs. Eugene was sometimes too aggressive with his brothers, having to be pulled off of them in what his father saw as abnormal tussling. Too much for even Marvin the Miserable, whom enjoyed doling out a good licking himself, to blow off steam. Also the chickens, Eugene had been caught mistreating them by this point, but there was one more thing nobody knew about. Eugene had, by some accounts from those knowing the family, been brutally molested, sodomized, for years leading up to this incident, by an unknown male of the area. Now, we've all beat up our brothers and sisters and cut chickens' heads off and been sodomized, so this is no excuse, but it might explain a little what Eugene, a born psychopath, does once he gets to Grandma's house around midnight. Eugene makes very little noise himself, but the house, old and wooden, doesn't appreciate being bothered at this late hour. Its back door groans open, then its floorboards creak and snap under the mass of teenager. He's a big boy, Eugene, well-fed thanks to Grandma, and well-muscled thanks to his father's demands of hard farm work. It's pitch black inside the home, but Eugene knows the layout like the back of his hand, a hand that now holds a sharp butcher knife, something he'd stashed away in the home a day previous, though he wasn't sure why, until a moment from now. First, he makes his way to the guest bedroom. Eugene finds the cabinet and slowly pulls it open, much to its screeching protest.
"Who's there?"
Eugene spins around and is surprised to see a form sitting up in the bed.
"Jeannie? Was that you?"
Eugene's 31-year-old Aunt Berta May. Unbeknownst to the boy, she had visited and now was staying the night at Grandma's, a guest in the guest bedroom. Who would have thought? Caught red-handed, there is only one option. Eugene's hands are soon literally red, bathed in blood as he attacks, quickly cutting off a scream with the blade. Berta may be struck dumb, but she still fights, throat gurgling, and manages to get out of the room, her nephew attached to her back, still stabbing. She hits the floor, awakening great-grandma Ogle, who begins calling out from her bed, asking what all the fuss is about. Eugene continues stabbing his Aunt Berta. This is fun, but he must take a break to silence the old invalid. He rushes to his great-grandmother and finishes her life with half a dozen stabs to the chest as he mounts her in the bed. Then Eugene returns to Aunt Berta, still alive, and stabs her in the back some more. But then he hears Grandma moving around. 63-year-old Ethel Ogle is standing silently in her room, terrified, when her genie walks in.
Genie? What's going?
Eugene Brown attacks. He knocks his grandmother to the bed, then climbs on behind her and slices her throat. He turns her over, stabs some more, then uses the butcher knife to cut the poor woman open, from throat to pubic bone, splaying the guts. Eugene then has an idea. He returns to his aunt and uses the knife to sexually penetrate and desecrate the mercifully dead woman by now. Over and over again he does this until the young man is finally spent. Aunt Berta May has been stabbed well over 100 times. It's a big mess. No use trying to clean it up. Eugene cleans his prints off the knife and drops it. He washes his hands and arms and face. Then he leaves, throwing his bloody clothes into a dense patch of honeysuckle vines along the path. Naked, he returns home and hits the hay. Eugene startles awake at one point, shocked by the realization that he'd forgotten to take the money. Oh well, he'd taken enough and was duly satisfied. Back to sleep. The next morning, Eugene is awoken to the sounds of his mother crowing like a rooster. He quickly puts on some fresh clothes and heads out with his brothers to see what's the matter. Oh yeah, Eugene thinks as they run down the path. Must be that thing I did at Grandma's last night. The sheriff is on the scene quick. News of such happenings travels fast in a small town, even in a place without phones in many houses, let alone cell phones or the internet, like today. Hell, it may have traveled quicker back then with the way people interacted. I should note here that Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho had been released this same year, 1960. In September, it had been released to the public. This is October. News of the knife attack would have spread from Ashland like wildfire in all directions across the nation as a result. Everyone was fascinated by the knife-wielding Norman Bates. A prompt and thorough investigation reveals a bloody footprint and a bloody fingerprint. When both are eventually matched to Eugene, he claims that he must have left those there sometime when visiting. When visiting after the bloodbath, son? There was no one allowed in the house once the police had arrived. Eugene, faced with this logic, fails to come up with a lie. Some reports say he entered the home with his brothers to see the mess. Eugene maybe could have got away with all this had he said the same. The prevailing thought was that an interloper, probably black, had done it. The KKK had a heavy presence here and was already gathering outside the courthouse, ready to camp out and lynch whomever was brought in. That is, until this 14-year-old local boy shocked the sheriff by quickly admitting, quote, "I done it." "Are you sure, son?" "Yeah, I done it, and I throwed my bloody clothes in a honeysuckle patch." The Klan backs off. Ashland can't believe this young man, well-liked and pleasant by most estimates, mostly by those who'd never met Eugene, by the way, could be capable of the crime. It will take decades and a further crime to convince many. After a short but circus-like trial, Eugene, now forever known as Raymond Eugene Brown, is found guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder. The sentence is life imprisonment. The boy, who had charmed and smiled through the proceedings, soaking up his new celebrity, flashing that smile at the girls who suddenly had such a fascination with him, the fellas, so much respect, the boy behaves like one and begins to cry. Not for his victims, but for himself. As he exits the courtroom in cuffs, he kisses his mother. When the photographers begin flashing bulbs, Raymond Eugene flashes his anger. "Now you quit that!" It comes out as a snarl. The room shrinks away from the animal revealed. Not a boy after all. A wolf in sheep's clothing. All right, Rosetta Stone, everybody. If you want to learn a new language naturally, speak it confidently. Rosetta Stone helps you absorb a language the way you learned your first. Through real-world context and conversation, no memorization, just practical skills you can use right away. Rosetta Stone is the leading language learning program available on desktop and mobile, designed to fully immerse you in your chosen language for a more natural and effective learning experience. I've used Rosetta Stone. I'm using it right now to learn English. As I stumble through this ad read. No, I've been trying to learn Japanese. I want to do that trip that I've been talking about, and I continue to learn through Rosetta Stone, and I find it to be a very enjoyable experience, easy way to go about learning. My favorite feature so far has been the built-in true accent. Speech recognition technology provides real-time feedback, helping you sound more natural. There's nothing that I fear more than people not thinking I'm actually Japanese in Japan. Now, I do enjoy knowing how close I am getting to the way it's supposed to be actually spoken. It's like having a personal language coach guiding you through your accent every step of the way. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. All right, everybody. I got something that you got to check out. It's called Le Pure Naturals Beef Tallow. This is a skin cream, and I've been using a lot of skin creams. My face looks crazy in the morning. I look at myself, I go, whoa, who is that guy? Has he been smoking 1,000 cigarettes every day for the past 18 years? Oh my God. What is it? Has he been through something? And I keep on putting on these creams, these cheap creams from the stores, and then I walk around all day with this grease on my face. I'm switching over to Le Pure's Beef Tallow Face Cream. Because it nourishes my skin with rich ancestral ingredients. It's back to basic skincare. It feels very effective when I put this skin cream on. It's got clean ingredients, so that's why I like beef tallow. It's got essential oils, aloe vera, raw honey, oatmeal, colloidal oatmeal. There's no junk in it. And I was feeling a lot of junk on my face. Pretty sure it's from a buildup of the creams that I was using. So I was looking for a new cream, and this is it. It just feels good when you put it on. It feels like it's supposed to be there. There's this non-greasy finish, beef tallow based, all natural ingredients, multi-use. I mean, you have dry spots, slap a little bit of it on. For your baby, slap it all over your baby. You get one jar, it'll last you for a really long time. And if you're worried about eco-safety, I mean, it's small batch, sustainable sourcing, minimal packaging, real ingredients your grandmother would recognize. It's one of those why didn't I try it sooner products. And trust me, your skin will thank you. Le Pure Naturals Beef Tallow. Get it on your face or get out of my face. Say hello to nature's original moisturizer. Visit www.lepurenaturals.com/darktopic to experience beef tallow skincare that nourishes naturally. Get 40% off your first order with Dark Topic. That's LePureNaturals.com/darktopic for 40% off your first order. Use the code DARKTOPIC. Mood, everybody. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. They'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code DARKTOPIC. I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself, and it's wild how different each one feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat. Actually, like 10 minutes. More like five. I mean, I'm a pretty sleepy guy when it's time for sleepy time. But in the morning, what I appreciate about them is that there's no hangovers, no grogginess. I wake up feeling just fine. And they're epic euphoria gummies. They're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crappy mood. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfactory guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code Dark Topic. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code Dark Topic at checkout to save 20% off on your first order. Draper Prison in Elmore, Alabama, a men's prison since closed, was known as an overcrowded facility in Raymond Eugene's time there, the 60s. The boy became a man while being forced to work the fields, something that came easy to him. It would be a 12-year stint in prison, not life. Big surprise, Raymond was respected and even given a nickname, Blade. Apt then for his killing method, apt today for the name's connection to the vampire flick. So much blood involved in his crimes. The way Eugene had done it, the house had been flooded, just like in the movies. The year is 1973. BTK, Bundy, and the Zodiac are suiting up. John Wayne Gacy and the Golden State's Joseph James DeAngelo are already out there, getting their own feet wet and sticky. The name Raymond Eugene Brown, among others, would not make the cut, so to speak, of my short list there for this time period, but there were many that should. Candyman Dean Corll, Freeway Killer William Bonin, Big Edmund Kemper, just to name a few more. There's many more. Raymond Eugene Brown would not make this cut because he would stop the killing when he was released in 73. He would keep himself out of trouble. He picks up mechanic work in the shades of trees in Montgomery, Alabama. He hides in the city. There's no going back to his roots unless he wants to be strung up by them. It's known now that he has Indian blood. Had the Klan knew that then, the teenage Eugene would have never become the man Raymond Eugene Brown. A man apparently reformed as he, between 1973 and 1980, gets married, has a child, a baby boy. His mother is proud. His father, after all the trouble and moves across Alabama to escape it, is drunk. It is at the mid-30 years of age point where this killer once again reveals himself. He can't keep up the charade and begins drinking heavily to cope. Raymond Eugene falls apart with the responsibilities of fatherhood placed on him. Some men will stand straighter with a child on their shoulders. Others, they break. Of course, they'll blame the mother and they'll tell whiny lies to potential girlfriends of not being allowed to see their kids as much as they like. But that's only because men like Raymond Eugene Brown are childish, which is why they can't raise children. Maybe it's narcissism, ego. Hard to stand up straight as a big-headed drunk. You're always falling over and coming up short. It's not long after becoming single and moving into an apartment that Raymond Eugene makes another scene. There was an incident with a landlady of the bachelor pad where Raymond Eugene landed following his divorce. It's not clear exactly how it came to be, but it's presumed that there was a dispute over rent, and Raymond tried to choke the landlady to death. In fact, he no doubt thought that he had, but she'd awoken on the floor of her apartment and called police. Raymond Eugene Brown would swiftly be arrested for the parole violation, aka attempted murder, but he went in on a parole violation. The killer would serve 6 years in prison for nearly choking this landlady to death. There is nothing to be said about his time or the time following his release. Nothing to be said until Robert commits an unspeakable crime, another one that somehow trumps the triple murder of his childhood. Wednesday, August 9th, 1987. Raymond is living in Montgomery, Alabama, with his new girlfriend, 31-year-old Linda Lamont. The wolf had moved in earlier that summer. Linda had no idea that her home was now a henhouse. Linda, a social worker and a mother of two, has a 10-year-old daughter from a previous relationship named Sheila Smoke, and a 6-year-old boy from her recently failed marriage. His name was Aaron. To say Linda had been unlucky in love, considering who she is currently with, would be an understatement. For reasons unknown, Raymond lost his mind this night while playing a card game with Linda and young Sheila. We know that they were playing a game, as later a piece of paper would be found with the names Raymond, Sheila, and the word me written across the top of a piece of paper. Linda had been about to keep score and had marked herself as me. Something happened during that game. Author Bob Curley and Baptist minister of Ashland, Alabama, where Eugene grew up, into a serial killer, believes that the girls had figured Raymond Eugene out in his book, Path of a Psychopath. I think he was drunk. I know that Linda's ex had made an appearance that day to drop young Aaron off after a visit. Aaron, who is in his room sleeping when this all goes south. Sometimes seeing the ex of your lover makes you upset, especially if you're a homicidal psychopath. Though sometimes immature assholes are set off by the smallest thing, like how a game of cards should be played. Since we can't be sure, let me guide us to the following morning, where we are certain of the events. Thursday, August 10th of 1987. Linda's boss can't reach her, so now she calls Beverly Evans, Linda's mother, to ask if she knows where Linda is. Then Grandma Evans gets a call from the kids' school. She is their emergency contact. Neither Sheila nor Aaron are present. The concerned mother, grandmother, immediately heads over to the house. She is with her husband, and the two become greatly concerned when there's no answer at the door. They try to enter, but the house is locked up. Sheila's car is out front. They begin knocking on windows until they come to 6-year-old Aaron's bedroom, where, after calling out his name, the boy suddenly appears from under his bed and agrees to open the front door. The little boy is in shock. He leads his grandparents to his mother, who lies dead in the living room. Linda's throat is slashed. She has been stabbed multiple times in the breast and genitals. Her torso has been splayed open from the throat to her pubic bone. Her mother screams at the sight. The father can only hold on to his grandson. There is no way to compose themselves here. But Grandma does realize Sheila is missing. The grandparents and grandson go to the 10-year-old's room and find her. She is here, though she is gone. There is a knife handle protruding from her navel. The little girl is pinned to the bed. Her chest and throat are infected with stab wounds. Autopsy will determine that a brutal sexual assault had occurred. And this animal had taken the time to take a photo of Linda in her eviscerated state and left it on the television with a big fat fingerprint on it. Why he would do this is a mystery, though it's believed he meant to take the photo with him and forgot it. Thankfully, he also forgot about young Aaron hiding in his bedroom. It soon realized that police had interacted that morning with Raymond Eugene Brown. They had his car impounded after an officer had discovered him in a ditch of Elmore County near his old prison. Raymond had been allowed to leave the scene with his fishing rod. He'd been drunk and complaining to the cop that he just wanted to go fishing. The officer let him go, as that seemed a reasonable request for 1987. The last time Raymond was seen, he had been stumbling to a nearby river. There is a manhunt. It takes 2 days, but they find the killer. He's disheveled and filthy, walking along the road after having emerged from the woods and visited a gas station for some food and a soft drink. Blood from his victims will later be found on him and in his vehicle. It's a slam dunk. A sentence of death would be the decision this time around, but death himself would find Raymond Eugene Brown before the executioner could. A little late, in my opinion, 2008, 20 years in. He died at the age of 62 from a genetic disease that his brothers also died from. This after having dragged out every process with appeal after appeal, a bunch of nonsense concerning an unfair jury selection process prior to his sentence of death. No matter, Raymond Eugene Brown passed away, and really, not many knew his name until today. You're welcome. And that will do it. We dig them up to shame them, those who had no shame in life, I heard somebody say about true crime one time. And I guess that's what I was doing here. Raymond Eugene Brown, just putting his name out there. Not very well known at all, not a lot of information. Difficult to dig up. This guy spent 20 years on death row, complaining and appealing, only ever concerned about himself. Me. That was the original title. There was that piece of information that drew me to the case. It was reported by some that at the Sheila Smoke and her mother Linda Lamont's terrifying crime scene, three notes were found, along with a Polaroid photo. One note read Raymond, another Sheila, 10-year-old Sheila, and another note read me in capital letters. And I thought, man, that's spooky. The killer saw himself as me. And I had this me in my head. And it colored my whole approach to this episode up until I realized me was Linda. Linda had written down her daughter and Raymond's names, then herself as me, like one does before a game of Scrabble, say, or a card game. And what tipped me off was that there were playing cards all over the crime scene, which was also mysterious to some. But I cracked the case. In the defense of others who have tackled this case as well, there's a lot of conflicting information, bad dates, etc. But the worst date ended up being Raymond Eugene Brown in the end. A dog who needed putting down, clearly after what he'd done as a teenager, but he was given a second, third chance by a system that saw a decent young man with a bright smile. If all it took to be decent were a bright smile, we'd be living in a different world, especially in an age where you can buy a bright smile. Slapping on a doofus like Chumley. Nah, I like Chumley. He seems happy. Though everyone with the flashy new smile seem happy, don't they? It's tough to tell what lies behind a bright smile. Lies, likely. Back then in a place like Ashland, Alabama, a God-fearing place, good people couldn't fathom what it was to be truly evil. It had to be a demon, they thought, that had infected their dear Eugene with a bright smile. That was the only thing that made sense. That or the boy was wrongly accused and some black guy did it. And the police didn't want to admit to it. But, you know, that's just the way it was back then. Imagine believing in demons, but not in the rotten nature of some. It's not that bright, you know. Not that bright to be fooled by a bright smile either, but hey, I've been fooled myself, and I'm really, really smart. Anyways, for those of us who know what it takes to truly turn around, but still feel guilty, and that guilt saddles you, holds you down, controls you, normal people, you know, for those of us that feel this way about our lives, I had a message in the beginning for you, and I hope it helps someone. The rest, well, that was Dark Topic. And I'll be back with another one on Patreon and Apple Plus next Thursday. If you miss me, you go check that out. Otherwise, every other week is the goal here publicly. And I hope this finds you all well. There will be merch available beginning June 1st. I'll talk at you next time about that for anyone interested in getting the new Dark Topic t-shirt. Screen printed, handmade. I got one guy on the case. His name is Dead Rick of Iron Bean Coffee Company. And these t-shirts are really high quality, and I'm really excited to get them out there to all of you. Until next time, keep those eyes cocked, those doors locked, and stay paranoid. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye now.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 16th through the 26th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.